at drunkendumplingchico.com, where we love food, flavor, and our community. And by Chico Community Acupuncture, offering accessible and effective health care through acupuncture. Chico Community Acupuncture offers a sliding scale and provide relief from aches and pains, stress reduction, and helps promote general wellness at 1815 Mangrove Avenue. Appointments and information at chicocommunityacupuncture.com, on Facebook, and at 345-5300. Se hablo español. This week, in the second half of the show, we're going to revisit the interview we did last week with local concert promoter Justin Maximov. But before that, we're going to talk about a tumultuous week in city politics. In the course of 6 days, the Chico City Council went from 7 to 5 members. On June 21st, Councilman Scott Huber submitted a resignation letter to the city, and 6 days later, Councilwoman Cami Denley did the same. Huber resigned after first quitting an out-of-state summer job, citing politically motivated harassment of his employer that turned to targeting of his wife's employer. Denley shared her letter of resignation on her City Council Facebook page, which has since been deactivated, and in the attendant post, she stated that certain members of the community have taken it upon themselves to investigate where my young family lives. In her letter, she pointed to surveillance and her 4 children being frightened by what they've experienced as her reason for stepping down. Questions of where Denley lives were brought to the attention of the Chico News Review in the days prior to her announcement, and the newspaper received multiple independent tips alleging that then-councilwoman had been living in Red Bluff while serving as a District 3 councilor in Chico. The CNR investigated the allegations and the circumstances surrounding Denley's resignation, and you can find the story Out of Bounds on our website at chico.newsreview.com. And shortly after the story went live on the CNR site, yours truly gave an interview with Sue Hildebrand on her KZFR program, The Real Issue, and what follows is an excerpt from that conversation.
Talk to us about, you know, the tip that you received and what you've learned along the way over the last really just 4 or 5 days.
Yeah, I mean, it's been since Thursday or Friday that we started looking into this. You know, I received an initial tip, and then a couple days later received a handful of them. And, you know, with things like this, you know, we take it really seriously. We don't go marching around and checking on people's addresses and interviewing people's neighbors. Unless there's reasons for it. And so, you know, the initial thing to do is just say, okay, the tip is that this councilwoman doesn't live in Chico. She, in fact, lives in Red Bluff, which is what we heard. So let's just look into that. So you do, you know, public record searches and you find stuff. And in this case, we found something. We found that in December of 2020, her husband, Cami Denley's husband, Joshua Klingbeil, purchased a piece of property in Red Bluff. And I say he purchased it because on the same day there was a deed of transfer, I believe is what it's called. I may have the name wrong, but basically it transferred full sole ownership between, was signed by Cami Denley to her husband on the same day, in mid-December last year. And so, you know, that's enough for us to go looking into it. You know, first of all, we'd like to have the counselor explain it. And, you know, I reached out via various means of communication and didn't receive any response at all from Councilwoman Denley. So I just did it on my own, and I went to Red Bluff, and I spoke with people who live on the street of the address of the home that Mr. Klingbeil purchased. And I got confirmation from several people that, you know, a family matching the description of Denley's family with a husband and wife and 4 children did indeed move into that house this year. And so, or at least was, you know, staying there a lot. And so that's, you know, kind of what led us down the road to looking more deeply into public records and finding out, following other leads and other tips that we got as well.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. Jason Cassidy, interim editor at the Chico News and Review, is on the phone with me right now talking about the recent resignation of Chico Councilmember Cammie Denley. So, Jason, you find out, you go, you ask the neighbors, and they say, yep, exactly what you're talking about. This type of family that you're talking about has moved in. And so then you looked into public records. What did you find? Where do you look? Where do you start looking for something like that? What'd you find?
Well, you know, first of all, you know, in the case of the initial search in Red Bluff, we just went to Tehama County Quick Recorder and, you know, searched their public records for, you know, a deed with you know, the name of someone who, you know, we were searching for, in this case, Cammie Denley and her husband. And then from there, you know, I wanted to go back to Chico and see where, look into Ms. Denley's assertion that she lived at a residence in District 3. And the first way we did that was going to City Clerk Debbie Preston, provided us with the intention to run statements the candidates have to fill out if you're going to run for public office in Chico. And on there, the address that was listed was indeed an address in Chico, in District 3, the district that she ran in. So we went to that address and we asked, talked to neighbors there, and turned out, you know, we found out, you know, many times over that she didn't live at that address, but the initial time was by knocking on the door and speaking with the people who live there and had lived there since April, and said that Stanley did not live there. And then we spoke to neighbors in that it was in a condominium, so in a condominium complex, and one neighbor was very candid with us and went on the record and said that, you know, he did see Denley at that address about a month before the election. She showed up, put a sign in the window, kind of wandered in and out three or four times over the course of the election. Then a few weeks after the election, he never saw her again. And he just assumed that she was that was her, like, campaign headquarters or whatever. Didn't realize, you know, at the time that it was the residence that was listed on file as where she was living. So then, you know, from there, you know, return to the city clerk office and say, has there been any updates to this address? Has Councilwoman Denley given an update for a different address in District 3, as she asserts? And she hadn't. They've received, to this day, at least to the date of her resignation, they had not received anything like that. And so I spoke with Ms. Preston, the city clerk, and she explained that the method that they confirm whether or not someone is in the district they live is simply to check with the county registrar of voters. And if someone's registered to vote an address that they have listed on their intent to run, and that address is in the district or the area that they are running in, that's sufficient. And that's and then that gets the ball rolling to the next part of it, where they can, you know, raise money and run a campaign, and if they win, eventually serve. And so I went to Duke County at that point and spoke with Candy Grubbs and the people at the Quick Recorder office out there, and got the latest info, which is all the public can get, is the most recent information on where someone has registered to vote. And indeed, there was a new address that Ms. Denley had registered to vote at, and it was in District 3 as well, but it was filed just about a week and a half ago, this new address.
Huh.
So, which is interesting, you know, and so, you know, as has been reported elsewhere, apparently there was a meeting set up that, and like you said earlier, that, you know, where Ms. Denley was going to prove her current District 3 address, and presumably that's the address that would have been supplied, but that didn't happen. And I also visited that home in North Chico, and it's sort of old 90s subdivision, and this house on the block was particularly, it was kind of run down. The yard had been neglected and dead and dying. It kind of didn't look like anyone was living there. I asked around, and one gentleman said he had seen the family there. The rest of the neighborhood, the people I talked to, said it was people in their early 20s, maybe college students, roommates living there. Who knows? I mean, it's an interesting question, and one that I'm sure that people are going to be following up on. But there's one thing that we do know, is that on the Cammie Denley's husband purchased their own Red Bluff, and on that Butte County Registrar of Voters voter registration form, her mailing address is listed as the Red Blood Hall. So, I mean, there's, you know, she's obviously connected to that, not so obviously connected to the Chico address, although that could be, you know, if she could come forward and speak to that, you know, maybe there's more to that than we can see. But that's, yeah, so that's basically how we sort of wrapped our arms around,
right,
the, you know, what the timeline of things.
Jason Cassidy, there's one thing that I sort of missed as you were explaining kind of your process of finding things, mm-hmm, out. And that was, you said about a week and a half ago, a new address had been filed. I mean, very recently, a new,
yeah,
address had been filed. And then you actually went to that address and found that it looked like nobody was actually living there. Is that?
Well, it kind of looked like it was just run,
yeah,
down.
Sure.
It didn't look like the place wasn't kept up. At least the yard wasn't kept up. And I visited, you know, I knocked on the door of that house. No one answered. And this was after I'd already,
yeah, sure,
canvassed the neighborhood. And went around the block, grabbed my car, drove. And as I drove away, there was a car there after just like minutes after I'd been there. So I returned, and this is not in my story, so this is exclusive to your radio show.
All right.
But I returned to the house and knocked on the door again. This is the house that is listed as the most recent local address for Cammy Denley. I knocked on the door, and I heard the very distinct sounds of a large, heavily breathing dog on the other side of the door. So I backed away and got in my car and left.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a good sign. Yep, that's a good sign. So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue. Jason Cassidy, as I've sort of pieced together a lot of these details, I still just have so many questions. One of the things that I do want to sort of clear up for listeners is that the way that somebody recently explained this whole idea about the difference between a home address and a mailing address is that, you know, for example, if you live in Chico but you go to college in L.A., then you, mm-hmm, your home is in Chico, but your mailing address is in L.A. in case you need to get, for example, a voter registration. But I do have, somebody recently sent me, our investigators over here at The Real Issue, somebody sent me the elections code. And
sure,
it says, what is it? I have to come up with it. Election code reads as follows. I don't know the exact code, but letter B, it says, and I'm quoting, the domicile of a person, and that's the same as the residence, the domicile of a person is that place in which his or her habitation is fixed, wherein the person has the intention of remaining, and to which, whenever he or she is absent, the person has the intention of returning. At a given time, a person may have only one domicile. And so it brings up a lot of questions about... It kind of seems like, based on these pieces and parts, it sort of could be justified and legal. And she was supposed to go into Debbie Preston's office on Monday, but instead of going in and proving that she lives in the district, she resigned. What do you make of that?
Well, certainly, I mean, that the fact that she resigned instead of following through with what was, you know, according to her and according to the city clerk, her right and to do, which is to go in and show this new address, that combined with the fact that she hasn't, Cammy Denley hasn't spoken with any reporters, I mean, it does make you question whether or not, you know, what exactly is going on. It makes all the questions stand out. And it's like, you know, I'm not going to suppose and comment too much on how things seem. You know, all I can say is that in the absence of being given the specific knowledge to answer the questions, we went and sought answers of our own. With regard to, you know, exactly what is acceptable or not, you know, if it is acceptable, that's fine. You know, we're not,
right,
you know, speaking for this newspaper, you know, we're not out just to have, you know, gotcha moments and get somebody. We just want to get to the truth. And if the truth is that Councilwoman Denley is within her rights to, you know, rent a house that she may or may not live with her family and call that her residents for her city council seat, that's fine.
Right.
You can hear the rest of the interview at The Real Issue Archives at kzfr.org/shows/realissue. And you can read the CNR's investigation at chico.newsreview.com. You're listening to the Chico News and Review Show on KZFR 90.1 FM and KZFR.org. Next up, Bring Back the Arts, the Chico News and Review series in which yours truly interviews the leaders of local arts and music venues about their pandemic recovery efforts. This week, the spotlight is on longtime concert promoter Justin Maximoff, who has been putting on shows in Chico and at venues across the western states for 32 years. In 1999, while booking shows at the now-defunct Brickworks Club, he started J-Max Productions and grew the scope of his live music company to include venues in Nevada, Oregon, and California. In Chico, J-Max's main venue in recent years has been the Senator Theater, where Justin has brought a constant stream of big-name acts like Modest Mouse and Bone Thugs and Harmony to Chico, and where last May, the marquee lights went dark as COVID shut down live music. With California reopening, Maximoff has cautiously started booking shows again, and if the September 18th Phoenix Flexin show goes off as planned, it will have been 18 months between shows at the Downtown Theater. The CNR caught up with Maximoff by phone earlier this week to talk about the stressful year and the uncertainty of what's to come. So you have shows on the calendar. There's a show in September happening in Chico at the Senator that J-Max is putting on. That's amazing.
Yes. Let's hope so. First show back right now is Labor Day weekend in Tahoe. It's the Hard Rock. It's with Revolution. And then we come back in Chico in September is the plan right now.
Phoenix Flexin, is that the first, or Flexin, is it the first Chico show?
It is.
And how, I imagine, booking shows is in normal times is something that requires a ton of planning and forethought. How long have you been working on this sort of fall schedule of shows?
You know, to be honest, we're kind of sitting back. We're not trying to lead the charge here. We're not Live Nation. We're not Another Planet. I'm not trying to run lead here. I'm kind of sitting back and waiting to see how this plays out with everybody.
Sure.
The people that back in March were starting to announce shows for this summer, I felt were really aggressive. And a lot of the shows that got booked for the amphitheater and places like that in June and July got pushed back.
Sure.
But in the last month, it's almost like things went hyper speed and it was just like, whoa. What just happened? You know, opening up June 15th, it's weird how all of a sudden it's like flipped a switch, and now everything's okay. So we're still kind of waiting. I even think September is a little bit aggressive for us. I would prefer to wait a little bit longer, but it was just it just felt kind of like it was time with college coming back and everything else going on that it was maybe time to test the waters and see how things feel. You know, we're not going back 100% right now. We're just kind of doing a few shows here and there because I don't know how things are going to play out. I don't know how things are going to happen, but we're just testing the waters. It's not that we're afraid to. I don't want to put tens of thousands of dollars into plexiglass and all this PPE stuff and preventative measures and then find out a week later that it wasn't necessary.
Sure. Yeah, so that makes sense.
We're not trying to get the forefront of this. I'm just trying to kind of see where people are comfortable and where they want to be and what plays out comfortably for people. We want people to be happy and we want people to be safe, but at the same time I'm not like rushing to jump into this like we've got to get like the first show back. That's not what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, are you have you thought about it? I mean, I know people are excited to just like sort of do life again and do the normal stuff that they like to do. Are you excited about the chance about putting on a show in front of people?
Oh, absolutely. No, the first time we're back, it's going to be amazing. I can't wait to see people in line for a show, yeah, and then seeing the lights go down and the music start. It's going to be amazing. We actually, our sound guy came in like a month and a half ago and said, hey, maybe I should just check out the system. You know, it's been like a year since you fired up the system.
Sure.
We turned down the lights, turned the system up, and it literally gave me goosebumps. So absolutely, the first time that we fire up that system, turn down the lights, band goes on stage or DJ or whatever, it's I can't wait for that. It's just a lot going into it right now in terms of, okay, it's not as easy as flipping a switch.
Yeah.
There's not a huge workforce out there. I've lost most of my employees. I don't know how we're going to staff it. You know, I mean, we'll figure it all out.
Well, and I know in California, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, a lot of news about the economy reopening, and they've put it out there that, you know, pretty much everything's open with, you know, they don't have to have social distancing, and if you're vaccinated, you don't need masks. But there are some stipulations with bigger shows. You guys don't fall into any of your venues, don't fall into the mega event thing, do you, where it's like 5,000 people or more?
Actually, in Tahoe, we do.
Okay.
But in Tahoe, I'm on the Nevada side, so it's not.
Different thing, yeah.
Yeah. In California, though, it's like they're going back 100% with sporting events. So I don't know. The reason I held off for a while is because we were never, live concerts and sporting events were never in any of Gavin Newsom's tiers.
Yeah.
And now that we're open, it's kind of been pushed aside and not really addressed. And people are doing whatever they want to do. So it's weird. I really thought we were a lot further away from doing events.
Yeah.
Than I think we are a month ago. A month ago, I really thought we were still not sure things were going to happen in the fall. And then all of a sudden, in the last 4 weeks, things have just changed. It's weird. Again, I'm not trying to set the pace here. I'm not trying to be the guy running in the front, because we're not one of the big dogs. You know, we deal in tertiary markets and secondary markets. And I'm seeing everybody can sell tickets and act like they're getting full capacity. So it's like, okay, you know, the casinos are doing their thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, the Ice Cube show's happening in Reading, and you've got all these shows happening at the amphitheater. So it's like, okay, how long do I sit on my butt and just wait for the government to give me the approval when everybody's acting like the green light's been given? So they're just moving forward. You know, I can't just sit and wait.
Have you been, from the artist standpoint, in terms of booking, are there a lot of eager artists who are ready to go? Has it been easygoing? Or
yeah, you know what? A year ago, there were a lot of artists that seemed like they were very COVID concerned about. Because with a lot of these events that we had scheduled for, say, spring of 2020, summer of 2020, they postponed into the fall or spring of this year, thinking, oh, it's only going to be another 3 months or whatever. They would send contracts that had way new language in them, like,
oh, yeah,
you know, they don't want hospitality provided, they just want buyouts, because they don't want anybody touching their food, and they don't want loaders, because the loaders, you know, would be touching their equipment. The contracts that were in place a year ago with all the COVID restrictions, that it's pretty much gone.
Wow, interesting. That's really interesting. What about from the audience standpoint, have you had people buying tickets?
Yeah, like crazy.
Wow, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, people are just dying for it.
But we also get some people that you know, it's a much smaller percentage, but we do get people saying that, you know what, I'm not comfortable going to show and I'm not going to go to show.
Well, you and I talked about a year ago when things were closing down, and you mentioned that at the time, you know, this was all new territory and you had no backup plan. What did you end up doing to survive?
To be honest, I wish I could go back in time and know that business was going to be down for 16 months, because if it had been, I would have taken up a hobby. I would have gone and gotten another degree, maybe gotten a real estate license or whatever. But for me, what happened was in March, you know, we thought things were only going to be down until maybe after Easter is what I think, you know, Trump said last year, hoping to be done. And then Easter rolls around and we're hoping for summer shows, and then summer shows don't happen. So we're hoping for Christmas. I always had this 3-month window where I thought things were going to change. I had no clue. I had no idea that it was going to last for, you know, 18 months.
Oh yeah.
So I kept working with the mindset that I'm 3 months away from doing shows. So every time we postpone shows, I'm booking more shows or changing the date from, you know, Tech Nine in May of 2020 to Tech Nine in October of 2020 to Tech Nine of April of 2021 to Tech Nine of October 2021. So we kept having to change flyers, change tickets, you know, reissue tickets. We never stopped moving that in that regard. I've got friends in the business who just checked out. They said, you know what, I'm gonna open a food cart when this thing's all done. And then I'm not joking, literally opened a food cart, and his food cart did so well he actually opened a second food cart. You know, he pivoted. I just kept thinking, okay, we're just a couple months away. So I stayed the course and it went into a lot of debt, but at the same time, my yard looks really good. I spent a lot of time in my yard, so my yard looks really good.
Did you get any help, like from the Shuttered Venues Grant or Save Our Stages or any of those kind of things?
You know, we're still in the waiting stage on that. I checked when I landed tonight, and I'm still in the submitted stage. We've been in the submitted stage for like 4 weeks now, and you know, that money was passed and signed back in November, and here we are 7-8 months later,
slow.
And people still, for the most part, haven't received the money, which is really weird because the restaurant grant, you know, that all went out within a month. And as far as I have seen and been told, that there's, based on the number of applicants and the grant amount of money, there's plenty of money for all the applicants. It would be really nice if they just got that money out.
Of course, a lot of things depend on whether or not you get that money. But looking forward just at, like, sort of the arts in general and the music scene and being a promoter for performing arts, like, how are you feeling about the future and moving forward? Are you optimistic?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's all going to come back. We'll figure out a way to make it work. What else am I going to do?
Yeah.
52 years old. I have, you know, tattoos on my hands. I'm not going to, you know, go get a part-time job. This is what I do. This is what we do. We'll figure it out. We'll figure out a way to make it work. Once it starts back up, we'll be right back where we were.
There are now a handful of shows on the JMAX schedule for the coming fall, including Phoenix Flexin on September 18th, Tech Nine on October 9th, and Coulter Wall on October 10th. Visit jmaxproductions.net for the full schedule and ticket information. Thank you for tuning in to Chico News and Review this week, and thank you, KZFR 90.1 FM, for hosting us each Thursday at 5 p.m. Thank you to Esco Chris for the song The Ocean, played between segments on the show, and as always, thank you to Cat Depot for our theme music that opens and closes the program. For more information on the CNR, including online stories, arts and events calendar, the Best of Chico contest, and ways you can support community media, visit chico.newsreview.com. Take care.
Why don't we begin?
Report to Fat. We hope you enjoy.
This is Fresh Hop Cinema.
Hello and welcome to Fresh Hop Cinema. This is a podcast where each and every week we cover two craft beers and one movie. We're based out of Chico, California, and I'm Max Minardi.
I'm Johnny Summers. Hello, everybody.
What a treat. It is weird not hearing you in my ears as much over the phone. I hear your full vocal timbre.
There's no delay.
Should we say anything more than that, or should we just go for it?
We'll get into it later.
Great. Well, then, Johnny Summers, take it away. What are we doing?
Yeah, this week on the show, we have our review of Luca. It is the newest Disney Pixar film, which tells